Welcome to She Hall, the Women of Country, a podcast dedicated to providing women in the country music industry with space to talk about their journey and obstacles. Our goal is to raise awareness on the topic of gender equality in country music through discussion and community building. I'm your host, Cassandra, and today I'm joined by Lynn Oliver Klein. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so glad you reached out.
We are so excited to have you here and for our listeners to get to learn a little bit more about you and your career.
Amazing.
So we'll just jump right in, Lynn, and have you talk a little bit about what you do and how you got to this point in your career.
All right. Well, I don't know how much time you have because, you know, it's been 30 years now. So just kidding. So currently I run a Riverhouse Artists, which is a record label and publishing company that I started at the end of 2015. My husband had been encouraging me for a few years to start my own business, and I had a really great job at a company called 30 Tigers that helps a lot of independent artists put out their own records on their own labels. And I really loved that job, but it gave me the idea to start my own label. And I love working with songwriters. I believe that everything starts with a song. So I've been doing that since the end of 2015. And luckily, the first recording artist I signed was Luke Combs. So that has helped keep the lights on over the last few years. And we've been able to sign and help develop other songwriters and other recording artists, which has been super fun. That's what I love to do the most. And up to then, I had done management. I had done A&R at several major record companies. I'd done marketing and distribution, but really my focus had always been on A&R and songs. So I don't love the management side of the business. It's not really for me. I'm not really built for that long term. I love working with managers. You know, I respect all channels of the industry, but songs and records are what keeps me going.
What drew you to the A&R and songwriting side of the business? There had to have been something that was the final place you landed.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, my Aunt Machen was a country music star in her own right. Just playing banjo, piano, you know, guitar lessons here and there. And I really figured out that I was not built for the stage. I was not meant to be on stage. And kind of figured out just through friends in school that were in bands that, you know, there was a career you could have on the business side of things. And to me, that just sounded really great. And that's all I've ever known since I was 19, is just going to see live music and being there when my friends were writing songs. And so I guess that's where my love started for it. And that's just carried through this whole time.
I completely understand that. Whenever I was graduating high school and getting ready to start college, I had the intention of going into producing, quickly realized that that was not for me, and realized I had a passion for working with artists instead. And that led me, currently I do marketing because it's a way to combine creativity and working with artists as well, but I hope to get into more of that management side. But it's definitely fun working with artists, and I'm sure you are very proud every time you see your clients accomplish something, and I can't imagine how proud you must be of signing Luke Combs. That's huge.
Yes, he is one in 10 million, one in 100 million for sure. Happened very organically, and it feels like it was meant to be. And you know, I got to meet a lot of his friends when we first started working together that ended up signing to the publishing company, like Ray Fulcher and Drew Parker, who have, you know, recording careers as well. And they're just amazing. They're simply amazing guys, and I am very, very proud to be in their company, in their good company. So you're interested in management and marketing, huh?
I am. Yeah, I love the creative side of things, and I love the fact that no day is the same. That's something that's very important to me, but I feel like that's a lot of jobs in the music industry. There's never a dull moment, and I'm sure you experienced that yourself.
Yeah. I mean, a day can definitely consist of putting out fires left and right, definitely being flexible, being able to shift gears very quickly, dealing with a lot of different personalities and sometimes egos, you know, being able to manage up, down, and all around is really what it's about. And keeping your cool while doing all of those things. You know, especially if you're a manager and you have an artist that's playing live shows every night, you know, sometimes it's hard to talk business during the day when there's a show to play that night. You know, timing is really important on a lot of these things. And as a manager, you know, there's probably six or seven different channels now. You got to wake up every day and think about the show, the tour, the press, the radio, the socials, you know, the industry part, the fan engagement. I mean, there's so many channels now. It's almost impossible for one person to do alone, which is why there's so many more companies now that have teams of people working with artists. There's just too much to manage with one person, I think.
What are some of the skills that you think are most important in a role such as yours on a day-to-day basis?
For me, I think because I really enjoy the artist development piece, for someone like Luke Combs, you know, by the time he plays these stadium shows, I've moved on. It's amazing to see and it's amazing to watch. It's amazing to be a part of it. But truly at that stage, I just feel like, all right, you know, everybody's doing good. Let's, you know, do it again. So because the artist development, you know, from the ground up is my most favorite, I think it really takes a lot of patience, you know, with young artists, with young teams, and just really trying to make them understand, you know, what they're doing when they take on a partner, when they take on expenses, they're running their own business. You know, it's really about educating a young developing writer or recording artist. It really is having the patience to educate them that this is their business and what role everybody plays. And I think because I've done that for so long, that's really important. I mean, just having the experience and the knowledge to be able to share. Again, even with someone like Luke, you know, I was a day-to-day manager for Zac Brown Band for several years, and their trajectory was kind of the same, you know, and so there were a lot of pitfalls that Luke could have fallen into, whereas I had been there maybe in a very similar situation, was able to say, hey, these are the ways we should probably try and think about doing this, and here's why. So I think good old-fashioned experience really helps. You got to be really detail-oriented in this business. As I'm sure you know, Cassandra, the devil is in the details always. So no matter who on your team misses one little thing on a one sheet or a tour writer or whatever it may be, you know, ultimately it's going to fall on your shoulders, you know, because you're the manager. So, you know, I'd say experience helps, getting all kinds of different experience and really being detail oriented and patient.
Thank you for that. I know I ask out of my own curiosity, but I know there's probably some listeners out there too that are taking notes and trying to figure out which direction they're headed in. So I think it always helps to have an expert like yourself speak on that subject.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier about signing artists, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what decisions go into signing artists and what that process looks like for the artist whenever they enter into one of these contracts?
Yeah, you know, that's definitely changed a lot from, you know, I graduated from college in 1995. So my first job was with Hootie and the Blowfish, who at that time were out, you know, making fans one by one. And there was no social media, you know, all of the drivers to really help record sales and really help you sell tickets was being on late night TV shows like David Letterman, you know, which doesn't really exist anymore, or being on morning television or being on an award show. There was a lot of, you know, print press, not, you know, your free weeklies, you know, in your hometown or outlets like the New York Times. Now, some of those things still exist, but these days, you know, an artist really has to be a self-promoter like never before. I wish that they could just write songs and just play their songs on stage every night, but there's so many things in between that go into that. And a lot of the business on the recorded music side now is obviously driven by data which is driven a lot by TikTok and Instagram and other socials at the moment. But as far as what I'm looking for, what we're looking for is always a trendsetter. You know, you keep using the word creative. I mean, I think sometimes artists get kind of caught up in this, oh, well, this sound is huge right now. This is a sound I love. You know, and they kind of chase a trend, or they don't even realize they're kind of chasing a trend, you know, or like, this is what I have to do to be successful. And really all anybody, any kind of talent scout is looking for is for someone that's original, authentic, real, you know, to themselves, and who is engaging with their fans. You know, they just want to see growth over a period of time. You know, if you were playing your local college bar, you know, are you then moving up to the local theater? Are you then moving up to, you know, two towns over, and are you able to sell out the theater there? Like, it really is just about growth. And to me, just being really original and just being different. You know, Luke was very different at the time that we started working. Zach was very different from what was happening in the landscape of country music at the time. So I like for artists to remember that, and for managers to remember that, like, any kind of growth, any kind of, you know, small bump in streaming numbers or 5 more tickets sold than the last time is really a huge win and a huge victory. You know, you just got to stay consistent with it.
Yeah, so. Thank you for that. That's one thing that I haven't explored much yet is A&R and, you know, the decision-making side of things. And it's really interesting to hear, but it makes total sense. And, you know, in my brain, I'm sitting here thinking, well, you still have to start by tracking those things as well. I know sometimes that's something folks forget, is that you actually have to track these things.
Yes, absolutely. And so I feel like sometimes artists can get caught up in the fact that, and a lot of them don't even need record deals anymore, you know, because it is so much self-promotion, unless you need financial help, which it does get to a certain point where it's like, okay, we really need to expand the team. Okay, we could really use some more marketing dollars, you know, on this next release kind of deal. So, but once you get into a record deal, I mean, you can expect to do more work than ever. Like, if you think you're working hard now, you're only going to be working that much harder, you know, when you sign that deal, trust me, because the team.
All right, Lynn. So of course, here at Sheeha, we're dedicated to the women and your journeys. And I'm wondering, and I know it can be a touchy subject, but I'm wondering what it's been like to be in a role such as yours and going through this journey as a woman. And has there been obstacles that you've faced that you don't think the men might have faced, especially with owning your own company?
Sure. You know, I get asked this question more often than I did, you know, in years past. And every time I think about it, or I reflect on, you know, the last 25 or 30 years, I can definitely look back and see some times where maybe I wasn't taken as seriously, because I am such a fan of music and so passionate about what I do. I can see where maybe people were like, oh, you know, she's just a great cheerleader for the group, or she's just, you know, or even being on tour with the Zac Brown Band, you know, I lived on the road with them for 3 years. And a lot of times I'd get off the bus and somebody would ask me who I was married to, or, you know, who I was dating. And I was like, no, I'm the manager. And then sometimes I would just let people talk while I was sitting there because they didn't know who I was. And it's amazing what some people will say when they don't know you're sitting there. But what I will say, and I probably did put myself in some precarious situations thinking back on it, but now that I'm about to be 50, I think about those things. But for the most part, I don't necessarily feel like I was ever treated less than. I may not have been treated completely equally, but I do think the people that I surrounded myself with really took care of me and really looked out for me and had my back. Whereas I do have friends that got into some of the horror stories that you hear about. And it makes me sad. It makes me sad. I didn't know about those stories at the time. You know, those things do still exist. But fortunately, I don't have a Me Too story, or, you know, what I want to do, because I have been so fortunate, is let everybody know that there are good people in the music industry. They're not all bad. There are a lot of bad people, a lot of shady people that will take advantage of people and situations, but there are also a lot of great people, and you just really have to know the difference. You know, always trust your gut and trust your instincts on those things.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I think it's really important. And that's one of the reasons why I started SheHa, was just to hear those stories and to, you know, get the advice out there, because I feel like women aren't always given that space, even now with all of the work that's going into it. Sometimes it's silenced. And I think it's really important to talk about those things. And it's actually a relief to hear you say that, you know, you're so very passionate about what you do, because I know myself, even as a young professional in the industry, I've already been told that I'm too close to my work. I'm too close to the artists I work with. I care too much about their music. And it's hurtful when you hear those things, because why shouldn't you be working with what you're passionate about? It's the reason why we do what we do. And so it's a relief to hear that somebody else has been through that and that it's 100% not true.
That was very well said. Very well said. I mean, and trust me, I tried. There were times when I was doing A&R at Virgin Records in New York, probably 20 years ago now, there were projects that I brought in that I wasn't necessarily super excited about or super passionate about, but I knew that either other labels were looking or they had fans and things were bubbling under. And honestly, I don't think I really ever actually signed any of those bands, but this jazz horn player named Wynton Marsalis had written a book, and you know who Wynton is. And in that book, he said, someone asked him in an interview once, like, why doesn't he play ballads? And he was like, because I love ballads. And so I tried to carry that with me for a long time and say, you don't necessarily have to work with something. It doesn't have to be everything you love or everything you like. Like, you can just, and I'm not able to do that. I know other executives are able to do that, you know, and that is part of the job, you know. It is art and commerce. It is a business, so I get that. But luckily, that's why I have my own company now, because I get to work with everybody I love. So it worked out. Don't let anybody tell you different.
So I take it that's one of the reasons why you started River House Artists, was so that you could do what you loved on a daily basis and not have that passion stifled.
Yep, that is definitely part of it. I wanted to do something on my own terms, and I wanted to do something good for the artist as well. You know, we're partners with everybody that we work with. Everything's a partnership, and that feels really good to be, you know, I can get up and look at myself in the mirror every day and go, you know, I don't make more money than them. They don't. Well, actually, they probably do make more money than me. Especially on the co-pub side, which is how it should be. You know, there's plenty to go around. That feels really good.
As I was doing my research on River House, that was one thing that really caught my attention, because as I mentioned before, I love working with artists, and the fact that you guys are dedicated to the artist is very important, because not all labels are, and I think it's happening more in country music now than maybe other genres. But as a student, we've had to study this day in and day out, and there's a lot of instances where the artists, pardon my French, but they get screwed over.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sticks with them for years. Financially, it can be a real hardship if they sign a bad production agreement or a bad record deal. It has a lot of implications moving forward. And when they're out there working as hard as they are and they're not seeing those returns, it can be scary, and it's sad. I feel like maybe it's not happening as much as it was. I've heard more stories 10 years ago than I do now about that kind of thing happening. But yeah, there are still some predatory people out there that will say, hey, I know this person and that person. And if that artist isn't educated on, you know, how to get a lawyer and someone to really help them out and look at these contracts, it can be devastating. You know, it can be a real turnoff. Like, sometimes when we're doing A&R and we really love an artist, but we see that they've signed a terrible management agreement or sign a terrible production agreement, it's like, well, there's, you know, this is bad news. Like, we can't put in all this time and effort. I mean, for a company like us who are still relatively small, you know, we can't take on that kind of potential financial burden for years and years and years, you know, until there's real money being made. So what I would tell your listeners is don't sign anything. Don't ever sign anything, especially if you don't have an entertainment attorney look at it first.
Yeah, that's something that they definitely tell you, you know, going through the music industry and business program I'm involved with at WVU, that's something that they've taught us, and all the textbooks have the mock contracts, and they give you examples of what's wrong with this contract. Why should you not sign this? And it's very tedious, and I give the folks who do that work all the credit, because I certainly cannot sit and look at those day in and day out.
No, that is a whole different breed of yeah, executive, them and booking agents. Oh my gosh. I don't know how they do it.
All right, Lynn. Well, I only have one question left, and that is, what would you say to young women who are just starting their music industry careers?
Well, as we mentioned before, kind of always trust your gut and trust your instincts, you know, when choosing a place to work. And, you know, it's hard for, I know, I mean, you're, when I was your age, you know, a lot of my friends, and I don't know if this is still the case or not, but a lot of my friends at the time were really settling down, getting married and having children. And, you know, even guy friends, not just girlfriends, but guy friends. And, you know, I mean, there were a lot of people that were, you know, were not on my same path. You know, I graduated from school in Columbia, South Carolina, moved to Atlanta, moved to LA, I moved to New York, moved back to Atlanta, moved to Nashville. And I was single most of those years. You know, I didn't have a family that I had to pick up and move cross country. And it does, the job is a lifestyle. It's not just a job, right? It's your passion, but it's really your lifestyle. So I think when I was younger, I never really thought that I would have roots somewhere or have a family. And, you know, not until I was 40 years old did I get happily married and have an 8-year-old son. So it's possible at any age. So if anyone's telling you, oh, you can't have it all, or like, it's hard to have a family if you're in the music business, I just think those days are gone. I think you can absolutely have a work-life balance now. So you just have to figure that out, and what's best for you, and kind of not compare yourself to other people. And, you know, try to find mentors and leaders that can help you in that journey. You know, like you're doing, Cassandra. I mean, obviously you're reaching out to people, you're networking. That's so huge. It really is, outside of the artists and the songs themselves, it really is such a relationship-based business. I mean, I went to the Grammys back in February and went to a welcome party that Thursday night, and I saw people I hadn't seen in over 20 years, you know, and it's like a high school reunion. So, you know, just do your best and work hard and be flexible. I recently spoke at a women's event here on Music Row in Nashville. And, you know, my big thing that I said in that room, and what I tell my own employees, is, you know, try not to be short-sighted. No job is perfect. Some are probably better than others, but, you know, if you got to go somewhere and take a lesser title, or, you know, they're not giving you that extra $5,000 that you want, you know, if it's a great company, you know, figure out a way to just make it work and see if there's other opportunities as you grow into something there. I feel like a lot of times it feels like I take all these giant steps forward, and then I might take a few steps back, and then I leap forward, and then, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and there's a lot of ebbs and flows, and you got to have a thick skin to kind of do all that. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but that's just the reality, you know, of our industry.
Yeah, thank you. It's listening to you talk, it was definitely comforting to me, because I know, speaking from my own personal experience, even at the age of 24, I've already been told, don't expect to be able to have a family and a career in the music industry. And yeah. Of course, I heard this, you know, from a man in the industry, and it was devastating. I had a few weeks where I really questioned what I was doing, because even though I know that's not in my very near future of having a family, I have way too much to do right now.
Yes.
But it really stops your world when that's something that you've always wanted. And it really made me think things over. And then I kind of had a moment where I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let this get me down. And if that's what I want to do, I'm going to do it. So hearing that somebody else has had that experience and proved them wrong, it really means a lot. And I'm sure other folks have been through that same issue.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, especially in New York and LA where I was, I mean, I have friends having babies at 50 now, you know, that live in New York City or LA. And I mean, which is kind of crazy. I don't know if I necessarily recommend that, but it's exhausting. But yeah, I mean, there is no reason if you're established, you know, you're working hard, you're grinding it out in your 20s and your early 30s. I mean, there is no reason that you can't have a family and make it work. I mean, so many people are working from home now. And even recently, the last two hires at Riverhouse were women, and both of them were pregnant. Like, we made them an offer, and then they're like, oh, by the way, I'm 6 weeks pregnant, 12 weeks pregnant, you know, or came when, you know, it's time to tell everybody. And they were so nervous and so worried. And I was like, it's fine. I didn't hire you for the next 9 months. I'm hopefully hiring you for the next 9 years, you know, like, people can work from home now. People can work from anywhere. I mean, Nashville is very much a be present to win kind of town. But yeah, I mean, I think you, as long as you set those boundaries and those expectations early, there's no reason you can't do it all.
If we had a world full of you, Lynn, I think it would be a much better place.
Well, thank you, Cassandra. I'm definitely trying to be part of the solution and not the problem, you know.
Well, that's what we want to hear. All right, Lynn, thank you so much for joining us here on She-Haw today. Any last words for the listeners?
Nope, just work hard and stay positive. And let me know when you're coming to Nashville. I'd love to meet you.
I will definitely be there soon to see you, Lynn. There's no doubt about it. And once again, thank you for joining us here on She-Haw. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Be sure to go give Lynn a follow, Lynn Oliver Klein. You can also follow our social media pages at She-Haw Country. And stay tuned for future upcoming episodes. And remember, it's She-Haw, because women make the world turn.